just how much of it we're only spending a portion of it.
Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Apologize for the delay. It's a busy time here at the Capitol. We'll start with Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 2651.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 2651 is the result of a forced consolidation working group that I chaired in recent interim under a budget division. And Senator Anderson, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of doing that. I think we got a lot done, and this is some of the fruits of that. This bill started in Senator Scogin's Public Lands and Water Subcommittee, and it's been through the Forestry Subcommittee, Environment Policy, State and Local, and Judiciary. And so it's finally here. It's been fairly well vetted. So, I think this is the first step, though, in trying to handle what we think is one of the real threats to our forests in the state of Minnesota, and that's fragmentation. And it also deals with what we figure to be the best way to enhance and to prevent fragmentation, and that's consolidation. So with me today is Kathy Lewis from the DNR, and she's going to go over those parts of the bill which involve the DNR forestry lands.
All right, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Department of Natural Resources, Lands, and Minerals Division. Section 1 of the bill concerns our Forest for the Future program, and this is creating an easement program for our forest lands, similar to the Forest Legacy program, but recognizing that it is a working forest, and so that lands can have forest production, fish and wildlife habitat, and recreation activities. Section 2 of the bill is a Forest for the Future revolving account, and this is creating an account with the Commission of Natural Resources for acquiring forest lands that meet certain criteria, and money would need to be put into the account. The lands would be acquired, there would be an easement placed on to the lands, and then the lands would be subsequently sold. Section 3 of the bill concerns an expedited exchange process for lands involving state and local units of government. This is primarily going to be exchanges between the Department of Natural Resources and counties. And what we've done is taken the existing exchange process and provided some expedited means for land titles and for valuation. And so this will also result in a cost savings for the department as we also aim to help aid in reduction of forest fragmentation. Section 4 of the bill is the appropriation for the forest for the future revolving account, and Section 5 is a separate section for this handled by different Forest Resource Council.
And for a few words on that final section, Madam Chair, I have Dave Zemeta from the Forest Resource Council.
All right, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dave Zemeta, Executive Director of the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. Just emphasize in terms of Section 5, parcelizations, the breaking of larger parcels of forest land into smaller parcels. Our council has commissioned a study in Itasca County that shows that parcelization of forest land leads to subsequent development of forest land. What our study would propose to do is look at how that parcelization is occurring across forested counties in Minnesota, extending the study we did in Itasca County to other major counties in the state, do an assessment of trends, drivers, effects of parcelization and subsequent development. Most importantly, then, assess available policy responses for the legislature to consider, including a whole range of approaches that are listed on the attached sheet that you should have in your packets, looking at things like planning and zoning, tax policy, fee title ownership, technical assistance, easements, and so on. And then finally, make recommendations to decision makers as to how best to address this problem of parcelization subsequent development. Just want to point out that the study would be valuable to the legislature in developing cost-effective approaches to address the various adverse impacts of forest parcelization and development. The $50,000 we're requesting for this study would leverage $150,000 that's already been committed by the Blandin Foundation and Iron Range Resources, contingent on receiving legislative matching funds. If we don't get the $50,000 from the legislature, we will lose the $150,000 that we already have on the table. The governor's 2008 supplemental budget includes $53,000 to fund this study. This Senate file 2651 has received multiple hearings, as Senator Saxog mentioned, and we have a bill in the House, House file 3898, which has also received multiple hearings and includes $50,000 for the study. Study has broad-based bipartisan support, and with that, I'll take any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions? Do you have any other testifiers, Senator Saxog?
No, I don't, Madam Chair.
And we're going to let Mr. Mueller talk about the fiscal note.
Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note just pertains to Section 3 of the bill, which is the expedited exchanges of land. And the new process here that the DNR would be using under the bill would actually save the state a little bit of money. About, they're estimating $66,000 per year. So that's what the fiscal note shows. And, again, that's just for Section 3 of the bill. The fiscal note does not take into consideration the cost of the study, so of $50,000. But
okay. Well, thank you, Senator Saxog. It's nice of you to bring a bill that balances to us, more or less. So that's really helpful.
I'll try to do it again, Madam
Chair.
More
often, yeah, that's great. I wish everyone would do that. They come up with a source of revenue to pay for their good ideas. I appreciate all the work that you've been doing on this, Senator Saxog. So let's see. Are there questions from the committee?
Otherwise, Madam Chair, I would move that we pass 2651 and lay it on the table for possible inclusion, possible going by itself.
That sounds good, Senator Saxog. I think as we meet with the committee in the next few days, we'll make decisions about what bills will be incorporated in the finance or omnibus bills and which ones will go separately. So let's do that. Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 2651? All right. Hearing none on Senator Saxog's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. I think Senator Olson was here. Great. All right, thank you. The latest engrossment of Senate, well, let's see. You have three bills, Senator Olson. The Senate File 2943 we have listed first. And that the latest version is coming around. Do you have
Ben?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm here today on behalf of Senate File 2943, and I know that a number of you were in Senator Chaudhry's committee and already heard witnesses testify on behalf of this bill, but just to briefly, without going into all the details over again, but for those of you who were not in the committee, what the Star Lakes proposal would do is recognize lake associations who are engaging in desirable lake management practices. Basically, the requirement, the initial requirement, is that they would have to have membership of at least half the residents of a lake, and then those lake, they would have to put together a lake management plan. And the idea is that this would be done in conjunction with local units of government, with soil and water, or the DNR. In the past, lake associations already, many of them have already been doing this, but the idea is that they would continue to work with local state organizations to put together these lake management plans. And then the bill sets out certain components that the lake management plan would have to include. So, for example, the lake management plan would include a plan for increasing native vegetation in the littoral area of the lake, increase native vegetation along the shoreline, prevent, reduce, or eliminate aquatic invasive species in the lake, increase or maintain a healthy, diverse fishery that is appropriate for the lake or river, and then set out a plan for how the association will work with state agencies and local government units to identify water pollution sources and impairments. And then there are several other factors that are continue to, I won't read them all to you, but continue to talk about basically a plan for the Lake Association to be a volunteer partner in helping local units of government and state agencies implement desirable lake management practices. I first put together the idea for this plan after having met with a number of lake associations who had approached me as their state senator and asked me to speak with different state agencies on their behalf in addressing specific issues that the Lake Association was concerned about. During that process, even though I'm not on the environmental committee, I learned quite a bit about what's good for lake management and ways that lake associations could assist the government with improving and maintaining the health of lakes. In fact, it seemed to me, after having a number of these kinds of contacts, that the lake associations are kind of our first level of defense. And most of the work that's being done is being done entirely on a volunteer basis. People living around these lakes dedicate their financial resources and often a very significant amount of their time because they care about our lakes. So it seemed to me that we should encourage that type of behavior and do what we could to sort of harness the interest and concern for our lakes' welfare. I wasn't sure how the lake associations would respond to this concept, and in fact, I wasn't even sure what the details of the concept would be. But, Madam Chair, as you know, I initially contacted you to discuss this idea. I also spoke with Senator Chaudhry and a couple of other senators, and I was encouraged to move forward with public meetings and find out what kind of public response there might be to this idea. So I did that. And I had several public meetings, including one in Hackensack, a small town of less than 1,000 people, where on a Monday morning we had over 100 people turn out at the senior center. It was really a surprising number of people, and as you know, Madam Chair, because you called in by phone, the idea was extremely well received. And a lot of the Lake Association members were very encouraged that the state legislature would recognize the efforts that they're making and would be looking for ways to help them make those efforts more productive. So that essentially was the idea behind the concept for the bill. The details have come forward through the public meetings I've had with lots of suggestions, both from Lake Association members and from different state agencies involved. After the bill passed through Senator Chaudhry's committee, I did have a meeting with a number of the stakeholders who had some minor concerns about the bill, basically about the way the language was worded. They weren't comfortable that it might not give the impression that lake associations were going to be operating almost as units of government and were going to be taking away some of the power and control from local units of government or from state agencies. And so a few changes were made and were incorporated into the bill when it made its way through state and local government. And there really are not what I would consider substantive changes to the bill. In terms of the efforts or in terms of the policy, but with the changes in some wording, it was made more clear that lake associations are not going to, for example, put together a lake management plan on their own that a county or a city would then be bound to honor. It will be something that would be done in conjunction with the overall planning process, and so I want to thank the representatives on behalf of both the counties and cities for working with me. I also had a significant amount of help from Soil and Water and again with some changes. So, for example, rather than having appointees from Soil and Water and the DNR, which would have caused the bill to have a fiscal note for that, instead it says that they are able to designate a member to sit on the board, which will probably be someone without from their department, but it eliminates the requirement and thus the fiscal impact. So all the way along, I'm very pleased to say that I have had a lot of support and help with putting this bill together. The one thing it still requires at this point, and I think it's also stayed true to its original form. On the Senate side, it's set up as a nonprofit with a great deal of local control and grassroots type of effort, which was what was requested by the attendees at the public meetings I held. We did change the board membership somewhat so that the cities and counties will be able also to have membership. That was at their request. The reason, if there's a question about why the North Central Lakes Collaborative is included on line 3.23, that is an organization that it has reformed itself after having studied the alternative shoreland management standards that are now going through the process of rulemaking. And that group has a lot of expertise in the area and so asked to be involved in participating in this effort. The idea would be that initially what this bill will do is allow recognition of these efforts that would be made voluntarily by lake associations who wish to engage in these management practices, and that we would then set up the framework for future grants of money, whether from public or private sources, and be able to maximize the value of that money in terms of cleaning up our water or preserving our lakes by engaging in this public-private partnership. So we have the volunteers in place. We have the lake organizations in place. And for those who wish to partner with the state government, the use of our funds will be maximized through this effort, I believe. Other than the requests with language changes to the bill, which I have accommodated, I really haven't had opposition to this bill. But I have had a tremendous amount of support just because of the timing with the holidays, and we just found out at the end of last week that we'd be presenting here today. I don't have people sitting here with me at the table, but I think you'll notice from your package that I've had a great deal of public support for this effort. The only thing we need is we need a relatively small amount of money to make this come true. I'm envisioning that we have we'll need one administrative person just to be able to look over the applications that will be sent in and deal with it with processing the paperwork. I have had from private sources commitments, so I don't think that office space is going to be an issue in terms of having to pay for that, but it would be a reasonable and appropriate that one person to handle the administrative part of this would be needed. And then also because there's a requirement that occasional audits have to be conducted, there would need to be, to meet with state law, there would need to be some money available to pay for audits that won't necessarily, I learned from state and government, have to be done every year, but would have to kind of be at their discretion in terms of how often they would need to be done. So with that in mind, Madam Chair, I'm requesting an authorization, an appropriation of $100,000 to initiate this effort, although I guess and with the thinking that that level of investment is going to capture and a tremendous amount of value in terms of private effort and private funding that would be beneficial to our lakes in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. I'm trying to understand exactly, and I appreciate all the work that you've done on this bill, and it's been, it's evolved as you've gone through the process, but I think it's a really creative idea, and I appreciate all the work you've done at the local level. who would administer it? I mean, you create a separate board, the Star Lake Board. So you said that you need administrative funds to be able to handle the applications. Are those applications made to the Star Lake Board, or is there any state agency involvement?
Madam Chair, there is no state agency involvement. Basically, the board members would elect a chair and would hire one administrative staff person. That's what I'm envisioning. And those board members would basically pass bylaws that would deal with the specifics with regard to their operation. And I'm told by council that we do have other examples of this type of an arrangement already in place under state law, and that what we've done is designed this along the same lines.
I missed the last thing she said. All right. So would this be... are you looking for a one-time appropriation to get it started to help staff this for a year? Or is this something where you'd be asking for permanent state funding to administer the board?
Madam Chair, at this point, I would be happy with a one-time appropriation because I think once the players are in place and having formed their board, they'll have a better idea if there's going to be private funding available to maintain the effort in the future, or more specifically, what level of funding, if it's not able to be sustained entirely with private funds, would be needed to keep this moving forward from year to year.
Okay, so... you had in the original bill, in the bill we have in front of us, it has the appropriation going to Bowser, and they would just pass it through to the Star Lake Board. Is that your intention?
Yes, Madam Chair. Again, that was a suggestion by council that it would be normally that would be the way that it would be handled as it would go to a department for the granting of that appropriation.
Okay, so we really don't need to look to a state agency fiscal note per se, because they wouldn't be administering this. Correct? Is that more or less right? Okay. All right. Do you have anyone else to speak to the bill that you wanted to bring up?
No, Madam Chair, I don't have anyone else here today.
Okay. Are there questions? Senator Vickerman.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it's a good bill, but I was just wondering why down in my hometown we had a lake association. We raised all kinds of money just locally. Didn't ask the state for one penny. I'm trying to figure out why that couldn't happen up in these big lakes.
I think you're right, Senator Vickerman. I think, all the lake associations that are involved might, if they could chip in a little bit, you could take care of this probably. But I guess Senator Olson's looking at least to get it started with a little seed money. Senator Olson, anything you'd want to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Senator Vickerman, I think to get the word out statewide initially and to allow the process for the initial applications to come in, which would allow a lake to be designated as Star Lake, is really going to be, I've seen so much interest in this idea. I was really surprised, I guess, by the amount of contact I had from lake associations and how much positive reaction I've had. But I think that in getting this organized, it's going to take a relatively small amount of seed money to set this up and move it forward. Once that organization is in place, then I think the opportunities would be there to decide, for example, even to request annual dues if a lake association chose to pay them to support this effort. At the same time, however, the lake associations already are doing so much, as you know. And really are doing it almost entirely on a voluntary basis. And so for the state to recognize and support that effort is not only a good thing to do from an environmental standpoint, I would submit that it's an extremely wise thing to do from a fiscal responsibility point, because we really are capturing and encouraging the many, many dollars worth of savings. To give you an example, much of the back and forth effort that I spent during this last summer between lake associations and private agencies would be lake associations asking, for example, that I contact the DNR or the Board of Soil and Water, depending on the issue, to deal with a particular problem they were having, perhaps invasive species that were in some particular lakes. There are common problems, but they vary from lake to lake. Sometimes it's the amount of weed growth we've had with the warmer weather, drought of the last few summers. The phosphorus levels in some lakes have really increased where they've been, the lakes are almost being choked out by weeds. In other cases, there's a particular thing, whether it's zebra mussels or some other type of invasive species that's gotten into a lake and needs to be dealt with. Oftentimes, what I will be told by the DNR or the Board of Soil Water, not that they're not willing to help, but that there are certain things that lake association members or just people who live on the lake would and should be doing to help alleviate some of those issues. Things like revegetation of the shoreline, things like things like helping to monitor public accesses and watching boats going in and out to make sure they're not spreading invasive weeds and other kinds of things. And so so putting these two partnerships together and giving an incentive or a carrot or a recognition to lake associations that are willing to do this seems to me for the small investment to be money very well spent.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Just a follow-up. Senator Olson, ordinarily I wouldn't even question this, but we're in such a financial bind this year that we scrape $100,000 is a lot of money. What if we cut that in half or give you some? I guess I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm not so sure we can find $100,000. I might be totally wrong, but what's the least you could get?
Well, Madam Chair. Madam Chair. I don't know where that came from. I'm looking at you at the other end of the table way up there. You just got promoted. The committee members, we have a difficult budget to put together this week, and it's going to be in the negative numbers, not the positive numbers. So, Senator Olson, we're going to have to put this in the mix and see if there's a way we can find the money. We don't know that for sure, and I think our committee's going to be working very hard on this over the next 24 hours to see if there's any way. Senator Saxhog brought a bill that brought savings to pay for his bill, and we're not requiring that for everyone who comes to our committee. It made our life a little easier.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up question. Senator Olson, I don't want you to leave here thinking I'm against your bill. I think it's a good idea, but we're just going to have to figure out where we can find some money.
Well, if you think this could go forward if there was not a state appropriation, or do you think it would interfere with your ability for it to succeed?
Madam Chair,
thank you.
You know, the difficult thing is always getting started. And so it would seem to me that to ask, just from an organizational standpoint, to really move this effort forward, I think it requires some seed money. I would have to say, though, and of course this would cost money, so I'm not suggesting this, but just even applying just what we know about efforts to clean up water, that in the longer term, and I know you hear this all the time, but I think that this is really true, that it doesn't take much imagination to imagine how much in the long term we're saving the state by promoting and encouraging these kinds of lake management practices. And especially with our focus right now on clean water and knowing that the need is so great and that we have limited dollars, so we want to use them very wisely, this is one area where we pretty much have a guarantee that our dollars will be used wisely because this isn't something we're imposing on people that they may resist. This is a volunteer effort where we've already seen a lot of interest. I certainly understand the need to be fiscally responsible. I would just suggest that this is one of those small investments that can see great return.
All right, Senator Olson. Well, we're going to do what we can. And would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 2943? If not, would...
Madam Chair?
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, I'm looking at your 13-member makeup and wondering if you at any point ever gave any thought to having somebody on that board from the Native American community.
Senator Olson?
Senator Bach, I would be very welcome to that addition. I did receive a letter from Red Lake indicating that they were very interested in the Star Lake proposal and that they wanted their lake to be included. And so I've made sure that as I've sent out emails and updates about this, that I've been sharing that information. But I think that because there's the American Indian tribes in the state have jurisdiction over a lot of the shoreline, that it would be logical and to have them designate a member as well.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, they are a very large landowner, especially in the north, and I think as you move forward with this proposal, I think it would be worthy to consider them having a member on the board.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, if you would be willing to move an amendment, I'm thinking that the easiest way to probably do that would be to have the Indian Affairs Council designate an appointee to the board. I would certainly welcome that amendment.
Madam Chair, maybe Council
Senator
could
Bach.
Suggest what the right wordage might be. Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I think you could just probably right after number 6 on line 3.30, insert one member designated by the Indian Affairs Council, and then we'll just renumber after that, do a new 7 there.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer that as an oral amendment.
All right, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, that I would consider that a friendly amendment.
All right. Any further discussion on Senator Bach's motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Senator Bach, would you move that Senate File 2943 as amended be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
That's my motion, Madam Chair.
Sounds good. On that, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Olson, you want to do Senate File 3237 next, rulemaking?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, this is rulemaking. Tom, that's okay.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
3237.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3237 is a bill that requires the Department of Natural Resources to conduct rulemaking with regard to structures in public waters. And to give you again, I know some of you have already heard this before, but to give you some of the background with respect to this bill, prior to 2002, the DNR has informed me that there were rules that required dock structures to be narrow structures that they interpreted to be 4 to 5 feet in width. In 2002, the DNR went through rulemaking and increased the size of docks to an 8-foot maximum width. And since that time in 2002, in a few lakes around the state, and specifically in my district around the Whitefish Chain and the Gull Lake Chain, there has been, in recent years, more of a proliferation of large, what are sometimes referred to as party platforms or dock patios, or basically larger platforms on the end of docks. As we've heard testimony in other committees, not too much was done initially to put controls on the spread of these platforms until just the last 2 or 3 years. And then because of the number of them that were occurring in the proliferation, the DNR decided to do some more enforcement and basically put the skids on this practice. which, again, although you may hear differing testimony on this, they have assured me, the DNR has assured me, basically, that it's always been illegal to have these large platforms until about a year ago, about this time last year during session, I started receiving a number of letters from people who own these dock platforms. Some of you may have received them as well, but I think because they're common in my district, I probably received 100 of them. Again, they were from people who have these large platforms, and they were also maybe about half of them, but I also received about another half of them from some realtors in my area and a few dock manufacturer representatives or people who sell the docks. And basically, that it was a letter that was I received the same letter from everyone, and it made a number of assertions. One of the assertions that it made in that letter was that these large platforms are actually good for lakes, and that because we can look under our dock, as we all probably do who've been on docks, and see that there are fish under the dock. The assertion was that there's no reason to regulate the dock platforms because they promote a healthy fishery. I don't have available, unfortunately, the biologist from Soil and Water who was with me in the last committee hearing, but again, I know that you have some information in packets that I've given you that I'll try to summarize, but I can't do it as well as a biologist would. But in essence, what he testified to is that there really is no credible scientific evidence that says anything other than the fact that these large platforms are not good for fish or for the health of a lake in general. Basically, what they do is they cause shading and erosion to occur, and of course, the larger the size of the structure, the more that this will occur, which inhibits the growth of vegetation. It inhibits spawning. It encourages aquatic vegetation to be able to come in and take hold in these areas, because when you have just like kind of on land, when you have a dry patch of ground, the first thing that comes in and takes hold tends to be the weeds, and that's kind of what invasive aquatics are. They're a form of aquatic weeds. And tend to be, I don't want to say too much about something that isn't in my area of expertise, but needless to say that they're not a healthy thing for the lake. They also kind of disrupt the balance of the fishery because they tend to provide shelter to certain kinds of fish that gives them an easier time to prey upon other fish, and so they basically disrupt the natural balance. So we did hear a lot of scientific testimony, and I haven't heard anyone really come forward and dispute that. There was a study done in Wisconsin that also lays this out in a lot more scientific detail. And as a result of that study in Wisconsin, Wisconsin has put in some rule, or has done rulemaking, as have another number of other states that have looked at this issue, not just with respect to dock platforms, but more broadly with respect to the impact of structures on the water, and to what degree that should be regulated, or what amount of structure is appropriate. There are a couple of other issues as well. That letter talked about the fact that as landowners, the landowners should be able to do what they wanted to with their property. The difference, however, is that the water belongs to the public. And so as legislators, on behalf of the public, it's our responsibility to look at this issue and to find a reasonable balance. I'm certainly not suggesting that we're not going to have docks in front of Lakeshore. But what I am suggesting is that with the increase in development on our lakes, it's time to take a look through rulemaking at to what extent, both for scientific reasons and because we have responsibility to the public to look at what's appropriate on public waters, that we look at this issue. Now, what happened last year in response to the the pressure that came from this group that was not happy with the DNR enforcing the rules of the law in existence at the time with respect to this 8-foot width, is that the DNR issued a 1-year basically moratorium, a general permit allowing dock platforms up to a certain size, and said that they would not enforce that 8-foot width for a period of a year, and that they would then hold some public meetings and set up a task force to make recommendations. Well, they had these public meetings, but they only had 4 of them around the state, which is much less than rulemaking would require. And without the official process that rulemaking allows for, that would allow for the involvement of administrative law judges and would be handled in a much more formal and systematic way, basing decisions on scientific evidence and public input from around the state. They did have online a place where people could weigh in, and they also published the minutes of these public meetings. I monitored those sites because I had received all these emails, and because I also was hearing from Lake Association members and others in my district who were very concerned and upset about this 1-year moratorium, because they strongly disagreed that we should be allowing these platforms to continue. So I looked and I read the information on both sides. And it seemed to me that it was clear that aside from the one meeting that was held in the Nisswa area, the other 3 meetings seemed to be heavily weighing in favor of not allowing these platforms. But there were some other statements that were made, like, well, my neighbor has 5 docks and 4 boat lifts and this and that, and so what's wrong with my platform? And some comments were made about wanting to look at this or that in fairness this shouldn't be looked at just specifically with respect to platforms. A task force was then formed, and at the last committee there were 2 people who testified who were on that task force. And they both testified, and their report is also included in your materials, that the DNR should do rulemaking and should not do what it now has done, which is they've now issued another 5-year general permit. There was also testimony questioning the legality of that, since general permits are not usually used to change something that we have in law to allow for something that would normally not be granted on an individual basis, which normally this wouldn't be just granted on an individual basis without a showing of real need. But the main point is that even though the DNR convened this task force, they didn't follow the recommendations of their own task force to do rulemaking, nor did they follow the recommendations of the majority of the public who weighed in these few meetings.
So, excuse me, Senator. So, Senator Olson, back to kind of the beginning. This bill then would instruct the DNR to what?
Mr. Chair, basically it would instruct the DNR to go through the rulemaking process to look at the issue of these structures on the water. And what it also says is, since they're already engaged in rulemaking right now with regard to shoreland standards, that they would do this in conjunction with that process. And that was suggested by a couple of people. I guess my counterpart, Representative Moe, on the House side, who's the person carrying the bill over there, and actually a couple of members of this committee, that it may be better to do this, because the public has those in the public who are interested in this are going to be interested in both issues. And actually, this started out as when the alternative shorelands were looked at initially, this was initially part of the mix. But apparently, and again, there's kind of a difference of opinion in how this is portrayed, whether it was because some people were unhappy with that and lobbied to have that part of it taken out, or whether it was going to, as the DNR will say now, make the issue more contentious. For whatever reason, it was taken out. But it is a need that remains to be addressed. And at the last meeting we had, even the DNR representative acknowledged that they need to do rulemaking on this issue. The point, I think the reason the legislature has to direct this is because they haven't, even though they've known about this and they've known it's been a contentious issue for several years, they haven't started the initiation, they haven't initiated the rulemaking process, they've given no indication of a time frame when they plan to do that, and by giving a general sweeping five-year general permit, any of us who live around Lake Country know that there's always an expectation that anything you've allowed once will be expected to be grandfathered in. If we make this the norm for every lake in our state, which is what the DNR has right now done with its with the ruling that it granted in the last couple of months, that means that we're telling every state in the every shoreland owner on every lake in our state that it's okay to build a large platform on the end of their dock. A 170-square-foot platform is considerably bigger than the table that you're all sitting around right now. And if we have one of those every 50 feet or so, together with the other structures, the boat lifts and so forth, you can imagine where we have a lot of development. We could be significantly changing the look of lakes in our area, to say nothing of the health of those lakes.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I think it's appropriate for us to kind of review the background of this proposal, but I do want to emphasize that the policy committee discussed this issue thoroughly, and I think we might have spent at least an hour and a half or so on it. There was extensive testimony taken, and the policy committee voted in favor of pursuing the rulemaking. And I think it was also discussed that there were some money issues discussed there, too, but it was concluded that we should let the Finance Committee handle that portion. So I think we primarily want to talk about, although it's appropriate to have the reasons why we have this bill explained, I think we should, I don't know how other committee members feel, my own personal feeling is that we should kind of concentrate on the money aspect of this proposal and figure out where we're going to get, first of all, if it costs money, and second of all, where we're going to get it.
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator thank Harrison. You. Senator Chaudhry and I was just asking how much time we spent on this in the policy committee. Members, we have to get our finance bill out tomorrow, and everything that's on this agenda today affects our finance bill. And Senator Vickerman's committee is going to be here in an hour, ready to meet in this room, correct?
3 o'clock sharp. And
so we have to get moving, or we're not going to give an opportunity for any of these other bills to be heard. Senator Chaudhry is correct that we have to focus on the finance issues here. I know when we were in environment policy, we talked about your bill was going to state and local government to talk about the rulemaking, decision-making process. And I'm not sure, did you mention that already, what the... We need to know did they change the bill, or did they give any input? The discussion we had in the policy committee was whether the two rulemaking procedures could be merged or whether they needed to be done separately, and if so, what the cost would be. And we really need to hone in on those two questions, and that's all we have time to do at the moment, and then we need to move on because Senator Chaudhry's bill hasn't been heard at all, and we need to have a discussion about that finance issue before we get our bill out tomorrow. And I have a bill, and you have another bill. Senator Fredrickson has a bill. We have a lot more work to do.
So Senator Olson, if you could just tell us what were the results of state and local, and then either you or the DNR could possibly just quickly explain the fiscal note. Go ahead on the state and local, Senator.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, it was suggested by Senator Betzold because there were some concerns about the DNR raised about doing these two things together, and also that a deadline be put on the rulemaking being accomplished. One option, Senator Betzold said, if the DNR does not want to have the language in here requiring that they be handled together under the same section, was that the last 2.5 lines of the bill be stricken, and that after, under Minnesota Rules Chapter 6115, the language just be inserted by December 31st, 2009, which would allow for an 18-month period of time. However, that would probably generate a separate fiscal note. By leaving the language as it stands, I recall that in the earlier committee, there was thinking that this could be done in conjunction with the other shoreline rulemaking, and that the $1 million already granted would be sufficient to do that. So no changes were made by state and local government because they felt that would be a decision more appropriate for this committee.
Okay. And then, well, questions on that? Senator Hand.
Well, I don't know about that in particular, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just wanted to get some input from the DNR about this. And is there someone going to testify?
Yeah,
to
Mr. Loxamo. Well, right. Senator Frederickson, do you have a comment? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Loxamo.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. Kent Loxamo, Director of the Division of Waters. I'd like to very quickly clarify a couple things. One, the general permit that we issued isn't eligible for all lakes in the state. It's only general development and recreational development, which is about 2,000 lakes. There's the natural environment lakes aren't eligible for that permit. I think if you look at 170 square feet platform, it's probably half the size of this table, not the size of that table. But what we're trying to do is balance the riparian rights with reasonable use. And what the permit rules have not required permits for seasonal docks less than 8 feet in width. If you have something that's larger than that, it would require a permit. So what we issued a general permit for were platforms that slightly exceeded that size because they now make dock sections in 4 by 10 foot sections instead of 4 by 8. If they had 4 by 8, they could stack some sections out at the end and be entirely legal under the existing rules. So if they have 3 of those extra dock sections, we're talking about 24 square feet over what would be allowed without any permit under existing rules. And that's why we issued a general permit to cover that. As far as the costs, we don't think that it's effective to combine these two rule processes because the shoreland rules, we actually have an advisory committee already formed. They're meeting tomorrow or Thursday and Friday of this week. And this is a separate – there are a lot of people may have the same interests, but there are a lot of other interested parties that we would have to include in dock rules. So there are two separate processes, two separate advisory groups. We don't think that it's going to be effective to combine the two processes together. In fact, I would say that will probably take longer and cost more if we combine the two processes. We have a fiscal note that to do this, we figure that it will be a controversial rule. And it will take, 1.5, 2 years to get done. And our fiscal note estimated a cost of $175,000 a year.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Loxamo, at the policy committee, I forget if it was you or someone else who said it would be $100,000. So if we wait longer, will the price go up higher? This is preliminary as well. So,
yes.
Mr. Loxamo.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair, the what we looked at, we just got some information from looking at rural development and what the estimated costs for rural development are. And for a major rule, the actual estimate of cost of that was $286,000, I believe. Looking at the administrative law judge's time, all the notice requirements, and then having, and basically what we're estimating is a 1.5 FTE for the rules part of this and 1.5 FTE for the program a staff part of this. So, but to answer your question, if we wait longer, will the cost go up more? No.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Loxamo, is it possible that you go through this rulemaking process and end up with a rule that that is essentially the same as the permit structure you have today?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hahn, yes. And the other thing, that this section of the rule that's cited here is more than just docks. It's also retaining walls. It would also involve the definitions of marinas. So it would be the non-riparian docking structures that we're seeing with townhouse associations that build and want one slip for every unit, regardless of the amount of lot width. We would address those kinds of issues also.
And Mr. Chairman, and I guess what I was trying to get at is that if we appropriate the money and you do the rulemaking and you go through the process and you take 2 years and you end up with essentially the same structure you have today, is that a good use of the money? And that's my question. Is that likely to happen, or is it going to be changed? I mean, if the intent is to change the is to write a law that says we want docks to be a certain shape, maybe we ought to just write a law that says that rather than have you go through rulemaking that you end up with the same result.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, well, I can't prejudge what the outcome of a rule process would be. It may be larger or smaller than the existing. It could be something different. But you're correct. If you know what the appropriate size is, you could pass a law and we'd enforce that. But if we're going to do a rules, I'm not sure what the outcome of that would be.
Other comments on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 3237 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Discussion. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer one amendment to change a couple words. Senator Olson, this is just to rephrase something that's in the bill. Mr. Chairman, I'd move on line 7, after structures, insert that are allowed. And on line 8, delete allowed, and after the word and, insert the word the. So it would read, the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall update rules on structures that are allowed in public waters and the permit requirements.
Mr. Senator Chair, Anderson? Can I incorporate that into my motion, or maybe that work? Vote on that separately. Withdraw my motion. Right. Go ahead, Senator Frederickson.
Senator Anderson withdraws the motion. Senator Frederickson moves to amend Senate File 3237. Is there any discussion on that amendment? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Chair.
And now we have 3237 as amended.
Mr. Chair. Yes, I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator Hamm.
I just have, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have one other question for the team. DNR, is there anything that would prohibit you from doing rulemaking absent this law on this issue if the department felt it was needed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, no.
Mr. Locks.
And as part of the process that we went through last year, we are going to do rules. We didn't specify a specific start time because we're in the process of doing shoreland rules and other rules, so this would obviously speed up that process.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chair, I guess I would just say that they've issued a general permit for 5 years, which seems to send the message to the public that there's no intent to do anything and to encourage this for the next 5 years, which is going to mean a lot more dock platforms and a lot bigger issue to deal with in the long run, which I would think would be, from a public standpoint, you know, that there's a fiscal issue there, too.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Lacazmo, if you were to proceed on rulemaking without any bill passing, how would you pay for it?
Mr. Lacazmo.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Confusing.
Well, we would. It wouldn't be accelerated. We would probably take a longer time frame to accomplish that, and we would absorb the costs.
Well, Mr. Chair, how long will it take to have it? You absorb the cost.
What we're looking at doing is you know finishing some of the existing ongoing rule processes. We're attempting to adopt for Mississippi Wild and Scenic River at the present time, and then we also have the shoreland rule process in place. So we would be looking at gathering information over the course of this summer and commencing something. You know, after that, it'd probably be next biennium.
Any other questions? If not, Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 3237, as amended, be moved and laid on the table, passed and laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Bill passes to the table. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I'll try to go as quickly as I can. Again, I know you've already heard the policy issues with response or with regard to the Leech Lake Walleye Stocking Bill, Senate File 3243. I have here with me today Larry Jacobson, who's a resort owner at Hiawatha Beach Resort. There you are, on Leech Lake, and also Dick Sternberg, who's a biologist and outdoor writer who testified before. Again, I don't want to go through all the history of this, but basically, for a long time, there was a problem on Leech Lake with respect to the walleye population. Cormorants, rusty crayfish, and a number of factors that are at this point still unknown by the DNR caused there to be a significant drop in the walleye population there that caused the loss of over 30 businesses in this small community with a population of only about 1,000 people. This is a community that's almost entirely dependent on tourism. And so with the internet being what it is today, when your walleye fishing goes south, your businesses tend to go south with it. So the DNR, or the community of Walker, worked very hard with the DNR for probably 5 years, trying to get them, while they were figuring out what the problem was and how to address the cormorants and some of these other issues, to stock Leech Lake and get the fishery back where it should be. And the DNR's position for all through these years was that stocking would not be effective on Leech Lake. But finally, because of the level of public outcry over this issue and the effect it was having on the economy, a couple of years ago, the DNR did decide to start stocking on Leech Lake, and the stocking program has been tremendously successful. So I'm very happy to say that if you were to go to Leech Lake today, you'd be able to catch walleye. But the DNR, although they're studying this issue, still has not decided what caused the drop in the walleye population. In the meantime, until they completely figure out this issue, the community of Walker would like to have them continue to stock the lake because they really can't afford to take chances with their economy to the extent that to have a repeat of what happened before. The DNR's position has been, and I guess I'm sure they'll probably speak for themselves, but they've said that they're not sure what's causing things and they'd like to pull back from the stocking to see what might happen. The community of Walker can't afford, as I said, a repeat of the past, and would like to continue the stocking for 2 more years because they feel that within that time, and I think the DNR feels too, that they'll probably get to the bottom of this problem and be able to identify what the sources are of the problem with the natural fishery. So with that, for very brief comments, I'd like to turn the microphone.
Did that again. Senator Olson. We may not have time to take testimony, and I apologize to your testifiers, but we had very extensive testimony on this bill as well in the Environment Committee. So I think we need to focus on the cost issue. That's what this committee is overseeing. And then if members have questions, please ask them, because I know not everyone serves on the Environment Committee. Members, I'm just worried. If there's any chance of getting this bill to move forward, we have to finish them today. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, is there a reason $35,000 didn't come out of the Game and Fish Fund, I mean, rather than the general fund? Is that a discussion that...
Well, we can certainly talk about that, Senator Bach.
I'm wondering if the policy committee talked about that at all.
I don't recall.
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We didn't talk about sources.
That's a good question. All right. So tell us, just explain why the dollar amount that you came up with. We don't have a fiscal note on this item. It's just a straight appropriation. So how did you come up with the number, Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, the number that's being requested would stock the walleye at a lake, an amount that seems a reasonable compromise between the amount of fry that the community of Walker would like in terms of what would be comparable with Woman Lake and some of the surrounding lakes that are stocked, and an amount that and the zero amount. So basically, the amount of stocking that would be paid for with this request would be about half of what would stock Leech Lake with comparable lakes in the surrounding area.
All right. Question, Senator Hand.
Madam Chairman, I'm reading through this material. We've got one handout that's not identified who produced it. It just says why it needs stocking. I don't know who produced that. And we've got another letter from the American Fisheries Society that says this is a bad idea, and we hear that the DNR doesn't agree it's a good idea. Why are we doing it? Why are we considering this? I guess if we're not going to hear testimony, I guess I'm not sure why we should vote on it.
Senator Olson, I think those handouts came from you. Can you tell us the source?
Yes, Madam Chair. Again, I have, I believe that.
Yeah, I did.
Madam Chair, Mr. Sternberg, who is the fisheries biologist, is the one who compared or put together the why Leech Lake needs continuing stocking. And actually, with respect to the handout that you have from the Fisheries Association, which Mr. Sternberg used to chair, I'm not that familiar with that association, but I think it's largely made up of DNR members. So I guess it would be understandable that they would probably have a similar view.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Hamm.
I guess I'm a little concerned that we have a department that we are saying is basically incompetent on this issue, and we shouldn't listen to them. I'm a little concerned about that. Are we going to be able to hear from them on this issue or not?
Senator Hahn, I know they were spent a lot of time talking about this in the Environment Policy Committee, but we can certainly ask for a brief response. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to answer your question, Senator Bach, I think the reason it isn't coming out of the Game and Fish Fund is because it was the value judgment of the DNR that they didn't need to be stocking Leech Lake any longer.
Well, it's up to us as a committee really to make that decision. So it was just drafted to ask for general fund money. Senator Dale.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I'm getting the impression we're using way too many words here to get through some of this. You know, you're trying to get through all this by 3 o'clock when Senator Vickerman takes over. Is that right? All these remaining bills?
That is my intention. We're going to try. Otherwise, well, you know, we have a deadline tomorrow to get our bill out as far as all of the general fund implications of our budget. All the deficit reduction bill has to be passed out tomorrow, and that's the time that we have scheduled to do that. So I'd prefer to get the testimony, if there is any that's needed, and the discussion done today. And Senator Vickerman's committee scheduled to be here. We just can't rehash all the policy discussions on complex bills in the Finance Committee. And, you know, obviously members need to know what the bills are about, and if they hadn't heard the previous committee, I don't want to limit members from understanding what's in the bills, but I also don't want to rehash an hour's worth of testimony. We just don't have time to do that, and it's not appropriate for our committee either. Senator Dale?
Madam Chair, members, I think Senator Hahn is making a good point, and I don't know what more information we need, but...
Well, let's ask the DNR to respond. I think that's appropriate. Please.
I'll give you one.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Ron Pyre with DNR Fish and Wildlife. Madam Chair and members, first, in terms of the fiscal impacts, we would estimate that stocking $25 million fry a year would run about $62,500 per year. So the total costs over 2 years of $25 million per year would be about $135,000. Just if you're looking at different numbers, our calculations are about $2.50 per 1,000 fry stock. And then, Madam Chair, members, if I just quickly could, one of the reasons that the agency is concerned with stocking at these levels is particularly what Senator Olson brought up, is that we need to find out what's going on. And leaving a year where we don't stock in 2009 and we intend to stock $20 million this year will help us do that. And we're intending to engage in a long process with local and statewide stakeholders to develop a longer-term plan for Leech Lake. And if it proves that stocking is necessary on Leech Lake, we will do that. But we feel pretty strongly that to have a year where we don't stock is pretty valuable. There's good spawning stock Fryer hatch rates are as good as Red Lake, there's really no reason it couldn't. But as Senator Olson referred to, we think this in 2009 would be a good year not to stock, and then work with the community to develop a plan to see what kind of benchmarks.
All right, I'm going to, Senator Olson, I'm going to allow your one witness just a brief response to that so we can at least have an even-handed testimony, and then we'll have to leave it at that.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dick Sternberg, and I am a fisheries biologist and outdoor writer, and have testified in front of the policy committee, so most of you probably know what I have to say. But in response to Mr. Pyre's testimony there, I think we just had a blank year pretty much in 2007, this past year. It wasn't a blank. It was a very light fry stocking. And if you have a chance to look at the report I put together there, you'll see a chart showing what the results of that were in 2007. And you'll see that there was very little success in 2007. So the natural reproduction on this chart here, and this will be the second one in your report, the second chart, you see in both of the last 2 years, the light-colored portion of the bar is very low, meaning there hasn't been much natural reproduction. So, in effect, we've already gone through the non-stocking part of this, and it hasn't worked. So we're concerned about this. And I also, in regard to the American Fisheries Society letter, in general, I would agree with everything that letter says, but the letter makes one giant leap that I don't agree with, and that is the fact that we're dealing with a naturally reproducing lake here. And so they're opposed to stocking in a naturally reproducing lake, and they want this based on science. The problem is we are not convinced that it is a naturally reproducing lake, and the evidence that we have that I just pointed out pretty much shows that. So I think that's why there's this disagreement between the letter and the report that I put together, because we do disagree on that point. Is it or isn't it? And we're saying that it isn't. And because of that, we need to stock to be sure that those fish are going to be in there.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there questions? All right. Thank you both for your testimony. We appreciate it. All right. Would anyone like to move the bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill? Senator Saxhog.
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that 3243... I guess it hasn't been amended, be passed and
laid on the
table for possible inclusion.
All right. On that motion, any further discussion? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I wonder if $35,000 doesn't buy 25 million fry, what if in front of 25 million we inserted the words up to? So on line 1.6, after with, insert up to, and then continue with 25 million. And then the same thing on line 1.7, under after with, put up to 25 million. And otherwise, I'm not sure how it's going to work. I mean, Mr. Pear obviously testified that $35,000 wasn't going to buy that many fry, so.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion.
All right. We'll take Senator Bach's motion. Does everyone understand the motion? Senator Olson, are you okay with that?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. On the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I'm just thinking that maybe since we are short of money and the DNR is not supporting this, they've got their expert fishery people there that want to leave the lake blank for 1 year so they can see what happens. I'm just wondering if we really should pass this. Now, this vote is not critical, I presume. Are you going to be deciding later what goes in?
Yeah, we'll be putting a bill out tomorrow after we consult with all the committee members about what should go in and shouldn't go in and what we can afford to pay for and what we have to cut. And so you certainly will get another chance. So I guess it might be nice to leave it on the table for now so we can at least talk about it, but then by tomorrow we'll have to make a final decision. But, Senator Dill, that's up to you.
Well, I think I'll be voting no.
All right. So, any further? Senator Saxhog?
So, Madam Chair, I move Senate File 3243 as amended be passed and laid on the table for possible inclusion.
All right, on that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. All right.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Saxon, could you chair while I do my bill next?
Senator Anderson, Senate File 3540.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this is the Green Economy Transformation Task Force bill. This has been through a number of committees, and the reason it has an asterisk by it is that it's technically not in front of this committee. Anything that appoints a task force has to go to the Rules Committee. So it's made committee deadline, but it's sitting in the Rules Committee waiting for them to make a final. So in the meantime, I'd like to get it on the table here because it does have an appropriation request. Let me explain what it does. This is one of the green jobs bills that I've been promoting this session, and there's a series of them, and this one in particular sets up a task force of legislators and a number of outside stakeholders to talk about and study along with our state agencies to make recommendations about how we can best make use of the strong environmental and energy policies that we passed in recent years, how we can coordinate those policies with economic development outcomes. In other words, how we can take those policies that we passed and get some jobs to in our state, good-paying jobs, that will help support our economy and support our people. The bill lists the five big bills that we've been calling kind of our big five energy and environment policies: the renewable energy standard, the energy conservation requirement passed in last year's Next Generation Energy Act, the greenhouse gas reduction goals passed in last year's Next Generation Energy Act, both authored by Senator Pretner Solon, and Senator Dibble authored the energy conservation requirement bill, the Clean Water Legacy Act, which Senator Fredrickson was a leader on for many years, and the Biofuels 25 by 25 initiative. So all of those bills have been passed into law in Minnesota, and they really represent nationally leading policies in terms of energy and the environment. A lot of our discussion, I know when I was trying to pass the renewable energy standard year after year, I kept arguing that this will bring jobs, this will bring the wind turbine manufacturers to our state, this will bring great benefits and revitalize our rural communities. And some of that is happening, but I think we can do more. We can do better if we have a really intentional policy about how to take these policies and bring the economic development, bring the jobs to our state. And so this is the first step towards doing that. The task force will be created, and then besides coming up with a general plan, it will specifically ask for two studies. One is a market analysis of the business opportunities and needs that are created by those laws that I mentioned before. So, for example, how many wind turbines are we going to need in the state of Minnesota, and what are all the component parts that need to be manufactured, and what are all the what are the business needs to make those laws come to pass? And then the second part of the analysis is look at the labor force needs. So, what do we need in the way of a workforce to get the job done to meet those needs? And what kinds of workforce training would be needed to help take advantage of those opportunities? And the third piece would be an inventory of our current labor and business assets to see what we have now and figure out what gaps are that we can try to fill with state policies or outside private investment. So I've had it's really been a privilege to have a great deal of support from the Blue and Green Alliance of Labor and Environment to work together on this bill. I have with me Lynn Hinkle from the UAW, who worked at the St. Paul Ford plant for many years, Bernie Hess with the United Food and Commercial Workers, and Bill Haney from the IBEW. And I told them that I'll make a liar out of myself if I let them testify after I told everyone else we didn't have time for testimony. So I'm going to ask my good friends who have spent the time sitting here and have testified for the bill in support in some other committees, really just to be here in support and to be available for your questions.
And Senator Anderson, is there a fiscal note that you're going to be thinking of?
Mr. Chair, we have worked with the Department of Commerce and had a number of discussions with them about this, and we think that talking in the $300,000 range, I think, for the studies, but we also think that we can they can use an existing appropriation that hasn't been fully utilized that started the green manufacturing study process last year. This would be the next step in that process, and so they still have some appropriation available to fulfill this appropriation. So it shouldn't affect our general fund budget. So I think we can do it within existing dollars.
Okay. Question, Senator Bach.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson, on line 2.11, we say that the task force may accept outside resources to support its efforts. What is that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, I'm glad you asked that question because I didn't bring it up. I think there's a great deal of interest in this activity from a lot of sectors, and I think that we could raise some private dollars to help with the process of this study and this analysis. I can't say exactly who it is, but there may be some foundations, some unions, I don't know. Specifically, but we think there may be some private support that would be available to help the job really effectively. We just want to make sure that if that help does is offered, that we can accept it.
Senator Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Anderson. I don't know if this was heard in another committee or not, and I appreciate you not wanting to take up a lot of time to do testimony. It does say on our agenda that this is for discussion only, and I'm not sure if that means we're not going to take any action on it, but I guess I am concerned about the purpose to transform the state's economy, and I'm just wondering whether that's an appropriate job for the legislature to undertake, to transform an economy that is at least largely and supposedly, I believe, to be the result of individual transactions. So has this been talked about in a policy committee, and has that idea been explored, and whether that's an appropriate goal for the legislature to try to do?
Mr. Chair, this bill has been heard in the Energy Committee, the Senator Metzen's Committee, I think, the Jobs, Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee, as well as the State and Local Government Committee. So it's gone through three policy committees and has had a lot of discussion and full testimony. So I'm not trying to – I'd really love to have you hear from these wonderful people who could really help explain why this is important and why they think it could really help us develop our good-paying jobs in the future in Minnesota, in a state where we've lost thousands of manufacturing jobs over the last decade. We're in the hole when it comes to manufacturing jobs, and we need an aggressive strategy to figure out how to get those jobs in our state. And that's what this is about.
Senator Ann.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I appreciate that. Some of us think that lowering taxes might help do that, but that's a different philosophical view than what maybe you share. But I just wonder, has there been any successful effort by any government, state or national, that has been successful in transforming an economy to get it to work better? That, can you list any state that has done that and had it be successful?
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, and if you want to jump in, feel free. Senator Han, I can give you some very specific examples about how some state policies have driven job development. When it came to the Spanish wind turbine manufacturer, Gamesa, looking at a variety of states for a place to develop and open their new manufacturing plant to build wind turbines, they looked at Minnesota, and they ended up selecting Pennsylvania, and they built a plant there, and they now employ hundreds of well-paid steel workers building wind turbines, and they could have been here in Minnesota, and they did that because Pennsylvania had a law in place mandating renewable energy. And that was one of my arguments that I used in support of the renewable energy standard. Iowa has had a very aggressive economic development marketing plan. Their governor has sent staff to Europe who has met personally with wind turbine companies, and they've recruited three of them to their state while we've been talking about a lot of these things. They've been very aggressive in their state policies. They put their money into economic development policies that really do make a difference. And those are just two examples. There's a lot more.
Senator Anderson, but the discussion here, and as you say, the bill is actually in the Rules Committee. Is it not?
It is, Mr. Chair, so we don't need to vote on it.
Okay. And again, rather than a philosophical decision on policy here, what we're just trying to do is decide whether they're going to have a task force or not and how we're going to fund it. So, Senator Perzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson, while I know you've done put a lot of work into this bill, it appears to me as I look at it that this is, first of all, a duplication of some of the things that are going on already in LCCMR. And the concept of the appointing authorities here is inconsistent from the beginning to the end of the bill. Typically, we have a more consistent way of appointing in the two bodies, as well as the governors, and you have but these are not consistent throughout. And I think that what you've got here is something that it's a whole style of redoing everything in the state. And I think that's a pretty hefty package for just sudden dumping it, not dumping it here, but not having a great discussion on it that had more attention paid to some of the inconsistencies of which the plan may consist of, but it must consist of some other things, market analysis included. And some of these agencies that are going to be presented here by appointment can provide us with all that information right now.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Perso,
Senator Anderson.
There was a green manufacturing task force in the Twin Cities that the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul led that met over the last year, and this was in part a result of our legislation last year that supported that process of studying how we could use the Ford plant for new opportunities for manufacturing, good jobs into the future. And what we learned in that task force, in part, you know, in conjunction with Deed, who served on that task force, with the mayors, with the economic development agencies from the cities, and lots of other folks, is that we don't have this information. We don't have this market analysis. And that was identified as a really important need to go to the next level of trying to recruit these jobs to Minnesota. So, again, you know, this isn't a night. I'll just repeat, this has gone through three committees and had some detailed discussion and... So it's certainly not an idea that just popped up today.
So, Senator Anderson, how would you like to deal with
this? Mr. Chair, I guess we should probably just lay it on the table.
All right. Did you have a comment, well, Senator Bickerman?
Mr. Chair, I just wondered what did I can hear the best today. What was the appropriations? $300,000? I hear that right? Or?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Bickerman, yes, I believe so. And we've already discussed with the Department of Commerce that they'll be able to fund that. Appropriation.
But, Mr. Chair, that's subject
Senator
to what
Rick.
We need to do within our...
All right. Well, let's we just lay this on the table then for possible inclusion.
Very much.
Senator Frederickson, are you going to...
minutes. I'll give you 10.
Oh, sorry.
You've seen the fiscal law. Zero.
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, members, Senate File 3246 had a hearing in the full Environment Policy Committee and was re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. And we requested hearings in Judiciary, but did not receive a hearing. I know they've had a very, very busy, heavy load in Judiciary. So I don't know how much detail you want me to go through on this bill, but... I think rather than go through it section by section, I'll give you an overview of what the bill does and then see if there are questions. And I am cognizant you have another bill for this one, and we need to be out of here by 3 o'clock. But Senate File 3246 would allow the Department of Natural Resources to use administrative procedure orders to correct certain violations in waters of the state, are aquatic plants that are in waters of the state. And that's what you see in the section one of the bill. The apply to chapter 84, chapters 103F and 103G. And that would pertain to waters of the state and harvest control or destruction of aquatic plants in the state. Now, there are four other agencies in the state that have APO authority. They are Department of Health for well water, Department of Ag for feedlots, Pollution Control Agency for solid waste, and the Board of Soil and Water Resources for violations of water. Under the current ability of the Department of Natural Resources to require compliance with the water laws in the state, they essentially have three ways of acquiring compliance. One is a cease and desist order, or a commissioner's restoration order. And the third is criminal citations. In other words, issuing a criminal citation and going into court. The APO authority would give the commissioner another way, an intermediate way of compelling or requesting, requiring compliance of the water laws. It allows the Commissioner of Natural Resources, when they believe that there has been a violation, to issue a restoration order and possibly a fine of up to $10,000. There is contained in the bill, and I won't go through it unless you want me to, a hierarchy of requests for hearings. If the individual says that, yes, they violated the rule, they could have 30 days to correct the violation or to submit a plan for correcting the violation. And the commissioner, if the commissioner agreed, could hold in abeyance any fines or assessments of penalties. Or the individual could go through a hearing process. They'd have 30 days to request a hearing. Then after that 30 days, it could have a hearing before the administrative law judge. Administrative law judge would make a determination or a recommendation. And ultimately, then the individual could comply with the order, or the ultimate end would be an expedited hearing before the Court of Appeals. If it's found that the individual was really a flagrant violation, made no attempt to come into compliance, it's possible they could end up paying some of the costs of hearings. Conversely, if it finds that the state is in error, the state could end up paying some of the fees or all of the fees for the individual against whom the complaint was made. So, Madam Chair, that is an overview of what the bill does. I don't know if you want me to go through more detailed information. Mr. Lacazmo is here, too, to also answer questions about the bill.
And thank you, Senator Frederickson. I should start by saying when we scheduled this bill, we were told by the Judiciary Committee that they were going to probably schedule extra hearings even after deadline because they got so behind, I guess, in their workload. So we thought there was a possibility this bill might still get through the committee process. But I think it's critical for it to be heard by Judiciary before we would make a decision on the policy here. So I just want to make that clear for the committee. Have you heard whether they're going to schedule this for a hearing?
Madam Chair, I have not heard, although my staff and I have been in contact with the committee urging them to have a hearing. And I would want them to have a hearing on this to make absolutely certain that this is due process, fair hearings, and this whole administrative order process of being able to have hearings. And
yeah, that's important to have them review this. Mr. Lacazmo, can you just talk to us for a moment about the fiscal impact?
Madam Chair, the fiscal note showed $7,000 of expenses to the administrative law judge's office. and we'll absorb those costs. Those would be hearings that we'd already be holding under our existing restoration order process, and individuals there have the ability to demand hearings. So this would just be taking the place of those hearings, so it's not a new hearing. It would be for it would be an expense that we would currently be incurring if there were a violation that we sought APO on. And the revenues we expect to be minimal. If this bill becomes law, we have to do a report by December. It doesn't come effective until we do a report by December 30th of 08. So, and typically you don't have many violations occurring in the winter. They would be occurring in the open water season. So we wouldn't anticipate for the fiscal 9 that we would see many, if any, administrative penalty orders being issued. And after that, we feel it would be we'd use this for the most egregious violations. We currently only issue several restoration orders a year, so this could be used several times. We don't see it generating lots of funds. And the funds go to the general fund. They don't come to the agency.
All right. Great. Thank you. Well, Senator Fredrickson, I think we just need to lay this bill on the table, and at least the committee's aware of it, and we'll see what happens with the judiciary, the policy
Madam
committee.
Madam Chair, I understand it's an informational hearing, and thank you for giving me a few minutes before the committee to explain it.
Thank you very much. All right, Senator Chaudhry. Yeah, this bill is in front of us.
Madam Chair, Senate File 3714 stems from increased revenue from the unrefunded gas tax to the Natural Resources Fund. That increased revenue stemmed from two things that we did this session. One, we increased the gas tax in the transportation bill that was overridden and passed into law. Secondly, we increased the percentage of the unrefunded gas tax that goes to this account in the tax bill that was passed and signed into law. So that resulted in an increase in revenue to these accounts. And so once that happened, what I did was simply have our fiscal staff kind of draw up a kind of a proportional appropriation along the lines of what we've done in the past. And I will defer to Mr. Mueller to go into detail on what exactly is happening. Just a couple of things I just want to mention. This is kind of a straw proposal. I'm not wedded to any particular thing. I've heard that there could possibly be more need in the local enforcement grants as opposed to grant and aid. I've heard that there is possibly a greater need, as opposed to general enforcement. And then I've heard that there may be an increase, more of a need in the rehab of trails as opposed to grant and aids. That's certainly up for discussion. I'm not wedded to any particular one. But I do think that we should, the legislature should appropriate it. And I think one of the reasons why I supported increasing the unrefunded gas tax is because it is an opportunity to increase dollars to enforcement, particularly in the ATV area, as well as provide dollars for sustainable trail development. So that's what we have here, and I would defer to Mr. Mueller to give us a quick summary, and then I've got two witnesses who will kind of just give us their quick thoughts on this. I think the DNR probably would like to speak as well.
Madam Chair, I'll go through this document that was handed out. It's a two-sided document. We'll go through this side that's called New DNR Revenues from Increase in Gas Tax first. Basically, this lists on the first row of boxes on top list the money that came from the gas tax before the increase in the gas tax bill. So we were getting about $15 million in various DNR accounts from the gas tax before the gas tax bill increase. The second set of boxes there are the amount now that we're getting with the gas tax increase. And then the difference, you can see the change is the last set of boxes there. So there's about $4.6 million in 2009 of new revenue coming into these accounts, and then it increases even more in 2010. A lot of that is because when the gas tax gets fully implemented, and also reflecting the change in Center Box early tax bill also changed the percent of the amount that goes for ATVs. It went from 0.15 to 0.27. So basically all those changes put new revenue into a number of different accounts at the DNR. Senator Chaudhary's bill, if we flip over to the next page, only makes appropriations out of two of those accounts, the water rec account and the ATV account. And you'll see that down at the bottom. I listed again the new revenues that are coming in from the gas tax, and then right next to it says appropriated in 3714. The reason why I didn't probably shouldn't make appropriations out of some of those other accounts like snowmobiles and off-road motorcycles and off-road vehicles is some of those accounts are already spending more than they're getting, than they're receiving. So this new revenue actually kind of helped them keep stay in the black a little bit longer. However, the water rec account and the ATV account presently are pretty sustainable, so this new revenue coming in could be appropriated back out again for increased spending, either in, you know, in the different areas of DNR. And as you'll notice, the bill didn't fully appropriate all the new money coming in either. Like, for instance, water rec will receive about $2 million new dollars. This bill only appropriated $1 million of it, just until we're kind of sure how much real new revenue is coming in. And then, like Senator Chaudhary mentioned, he asked me to kind of look at how the money was currently being spent in some of these accounts, and you'll see that above. Like in the water rec account, you'll see all the different areas of DNR where that money goes, and I have percentages there next to it. So about 53% of it goes to trails and waterways. So with this new water rec money, I sort of allocated to keep the same spread. So I added, you know, $750,000 out of the water rec account to park to trails and waterways, and then $250,000 to enforcement. Keeps the same kind of ratio of how the money is being spent currently. And the same with the ATV. Right now, about 45% goes to trails and waterways and 43% to enforcement. So we split the new money, basically, and then it sort of kept the same ratios. So that's basically a summary of the bill. Like I said, it doesn't appropriate all the new gas tax revenue, and I think the DNR might have a comment about that, how they maybe would like to wait a year or so to appropriate some of this new gas tax revenue. But it appropriates some of it, starting in 09 already.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mueller. Senator Chaudhary, anything else you want to say, or should we take a little testimony on
Take a little testimony.
Do you have your hand up? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mueller, I have a question with respect to the increase in the taxes, the differences between year to year. It is my understanding that, for instance, for motorboats, there is a significant decline in the use of gas as a result of the increase in the price. So several gas stations along the river have closed down. There is no, there are no gas stations for boats. I know because I own one. And so to make a projection as to, you know, how much increase do we have would be based on the current usage of fuel, correct?
Right. Madam Chair,
Mr. Mueller.
The rate, as you see there on that column called rate, is a set rate that's set in statute based on earlier studies. Like this year we just changed the one on ATV to go up to 0.27, and that rate will stay in law and apply that to all gas purchases in the future. So you're right. It doesn't, that rate doesn't fluctuate year to year because we are not able to make an annual judgment about which of these categories use a certain amount of gas. Periodically, there's different studies to look at that rate, and then we adjust that rate in law. So that rate will stay fixed until there's some new study showing how much gas motorboats really consume.
Madam Chair, Mr. Mueller, do we have a sense of the, if we are able to look at the two previous or three previous years where we have had the most significant increases in the price of fuel as to how much the decline has been with respect to these So I want to see what is the difference in budget in the previous 2 or 3 years to see if we can make a projection for the future. Because I think this money is going to be declining rather than going up.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
I think that those are fair points. I'm also informed, however, that boating as well as ATV registrations are on the increase as well. So there is increased usage, and of course the ATV usage has exploded over the past decade. So that could offset some of this, decrease in gas revenue because of the price.
So I think it's something to monitor in the next few years, absolutely, Senator Torres Rain, see if we can get some really good data. It's hard to collect that data exactly. But gasoline prices are not going down, and who knows where they're going to how high they'll go in the next few years. So at some point it may have a really significant impact. Let's hear from some of the testifiers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota and the Amateur Riders Motorcycles, which are the dirt bikers. Last year, as you all know, we expand the funding in the enforcement arena and also the trails arena with our registration increase from $30 to $45 every 3 years. Actually, it was an increase of $1.6 million per year. We included last year $500,000 for DNR enforcement, $100,000 for the local grants enforcement, and then $250,000 for our ambassadors program. So actually threw in about $850,000 geared towards enforcement with all-terrain, and this is targeted primarily at all-terrain vehicles, but also has an impact with the motorcyclists as well. The governor's and we also, in addition to that, threw an additional $500,000 for grant and aid trails, which is something that we were behind on because we did have a lot of requests for grant and aid trails. The issue that we're really facing right now with the conclusion of the forest inventory process that we've been going through the last few years is the designation of trails, and once they're designated, the question is how can we maintain and monitor and rehab those trails to make sure that they remain sustainable. And basically, the $300,000 that the governor's rec had in his budget certainly goes a long ways to help that. But I would say any additional monies should be targeted. The vast majority of that, I believe, should be targeted towards this trail maintenance and monitoring and rehab, because we really need to get these additional 800 or 900 miles that the DNR is designating, in sustainable shape and keep them there. We believe that's obviously real critical to our cause. And in addition to that, I think I don't know as though DNR needs any more enforcement dollars, because frankly, I don't know if they've hired and utilized the money that we gave them last year, the funding we gave them last year. But that being said, one of the areas that we believe if you would like to spend more money in enforcement, the area that we really could use more money is perhaps in the sheriffs or the local government, because we believe we get a pretty good bang for our buck for that, and it does really bring the locals into that whole enforcement arena. And if you look at a lot of our fatalities and stuff are really on county roads, not in our trails. And when we have people, illegally riding near ATVs in some of those situations, they need to be stopped and they need to be ticketed. And basically, it's the county sheriffs or deputies that do that. So we are a strong believer in perhaps giving more money to the local units, local sheriff's grants. And actually, Eric Hyland from the Sheriff's Association is here. I think would be willing to testify if you want about how they utilize that money. So our recommendation would be an additional $250,000 for the trail maintenance, rehab, monitoring, and another $100,000 for the sheriff's program. So that would be additional $350,000. We think that could be spent wisely by DNR, and doesn't spend all the new money, but I don't think just because it's new money you have to spend it. I think the issue is can you spend it wisely. So that's what we would actually recommend. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bone. Mr. Botzek.
Gary Botzek for Minnesota Conservation Federation, and I can speak for Minnesota Audubon as well today. I don't disagree with what Ray just said, Mr. Bowen, but it's kind of a chicken or an egg. I think if we spend a little bit more on enforcement, we may have to spend less on redo or rehab or undoing some of the trails that are abused, shall we say, used to a point of destruction. So I think a little chicken or egg, you know, this is kind of an Easter analogy yet, I guess, but there's never anything wrong with extra enforcement, because if we can make those resources, natural resources, last longer, there's less money needed to rehab or redo them. So we support this piece of legislation. There is a partnership. There is a precedent here where we have, the legislature has moved some of these funds from the unrefunded gas tax from all three accounts, or all four or five accounts. They're all listed here, except the only one that's missing is the farmers, and I don't think we want to go there, but into enforcement such scenarios. So we support this legislation. It's a good stopgap measure, and we'll look at it again next year with the full funds. Also, one point I'd raise on the gas tax, it's our gas tax, of course, is based on the per gallon, not on the price of gas. So even if your gas is $4 a gallon, you're still paying the same amount of gas tax, now increasing, as we know. So that isn't exponentially growing, because the cost at the pump is now at $2.99 or $3.25 or someday $4. It's the amount of gas tax is limited, both federal and state. So we support this. We appreciate the senator bringing it in, and we hope your budget division will give it due consideration.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bone.
Madam Chair, if I could just make one more quick comment. And one of our concerns is, I know some people have said, well, we don't support enforcement. We do not support enforcement paying for enforcement that we're not getting. And one of the problems we have with putting much more money into DNR enforcement is that, you know, their number of conservation officers are limited, and there's only so much they can do. And our concern is that, frankly, we're putting money into an area where we're not getting our money's worth. So it's not that we're opposed to more enforcement. The fact of the matter is we want to make sure that the enforcement that we're paying for, we're getting.
Well, Mr. Bone, you mean that they need to hire more COs?
Yes. Because a few years ago, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we were called and asked by DNR officials if we would be willing to contribute $300,000 out of the ATV account for a new class of COs, because they wanted to bring them up to complement. And we readily agreed to that. And the reason being is that we knew that with bringing new people on, we were at least going to get the enforcement that we were paying for. And because we were told, frankly, in the late 1990s, that we weren't getting the enforcement that we were paying for. We were told that by DNR officials, and frankly, it upset us, because we want that enforcement out there. So that's why I would say that's why we gravitate towards the sheriffs right now. We think that with the complement that they have right now, they can't handle much more, and we need to go where we know we can get a bang for our buck in enforcement.
And I think we did hear that the hiring freeze does not apply to COs, correct? Colonel Hamm is nodding.
Yes.
Mr. Botsick, just to clarify, you said you support the bill, but would you like to see the trails portion go into new trails or to rehab? I guess maybe I'm not sure if you answered that.
No, Madam Chair, I didn't, and I don't really have a preference there. I would defer to Mr. Bowen on that. I don't disagree with what he said. I just said I would just add that an ounce of prevention sometimes is worth its investment, and I have a lot of respect for Colonel Hamm and what his people do. And you might want to revisit this. You just had Senator Olson in here on three bills, and as you recall, she worked hard last year to get a full-time CEO or conservation officer in the Mississippi Headwaters State Forest. And I really believe that this is something we have to look at in the future, is to designate some conservation officers in some of the state forests where some of the abuse is taking place. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to put people, Johnny on the spot, if you will, or Jane on the spot, to make sure that some of these abuses are nipped in the bud. And I know Ray agrees with that. You know, some of the bad apples are ruining it for everybody else, and we need to zero in on those bad situations and minimize those.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Bone, we really need to wrap up here.
Just one quick thing I'd like to make, and that is last year, the $500,000 we put in enforcement was for four dedicated officers for basically OHV enforcement. So, you know, I think we have been putting our money where our mouth is on this issue.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear briefly from the DNR, and then we're going to be done.
Madam Chair, members, Forsco, Director of Trails and Waterways, appreciate the time today. I know you're very busy. We also appreciate your interest in these issues and providing additional funding for these areas. Certainly with the reclassification of all our state forests, the road and trail designations, there's a lot of work to do out there. as we reclassify these roads and trails and designate those, they need to be signed, they need to be upgraded, they need to have some rehabilitation on those. So we certainly appreciate your interest here. Normally what we do is work with stakeholders to identify the needs prior to coming to asking for additional funding, and we just have not been able to do that at this point. Although I think you're hearing from several of the stakeholders today that they certainly support the efforts here. In addition to that, we have we've not really had an opportunity to vet this fully inside the department. As you can see in all of these accounts, as Mr. Mueller pointed out, this money goes for a variety of things throughout the department and in various divisions, and we have not been able to have those discussions as to where we think those monies should be allocated.
So if we do nothing on, if we change nothing, then the money will just sit there. The new money will sit there for another year until it's appropriated, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Any questions from the committee? All right. Thank you very much,
Senator
Vickerman. We didn't run too late, so I apologize, but we got through our agenda. Senator Chaudhry lays his bill on the table, and the meeting is adjourned.